Oh, it's lost its shoe.
There's
none in the fridge.
Who needs it?
My dear girl, there are some things that just aren't done, such as drinking Dom Perignon 53 above a temperature of 38 degrees Fahrenheit. That's as bad as listening to the Beatles without earmuffs.
Recorded live in Southeast, West, and Central Texas, you're listening to Free Drinks Next Week.
Welcome to Free Drinks Next Week, the number one alcohol podcast at this address. FDNW brings you weekly conversations about something different, over a bottle of something different. Join us each week to discover new wine, beer, liquor, stories that make us tick. One part alcohol, two part stories, shaken, stirred, and some comicology in it. You can find Free Drinks Next Week on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Facebook, and our website to be named later. Give us a thumbs up in Stitcher, like us on Facebook, leave a review on our iTunes page. I'd personally like to welcome our co-hosts, Mike and Christy. Cassie won't be joining us tonight. She's hanging out with her mother. And little Chris might be joining us as he never goes to bed the first time. Without further ado, what has everyone drank this week or drinking tonight?
I'll kick it off with something weird. A bottle of Cabernet Franc 2013 Reserve from Stonehills in Kansas.
Where do they get their grapes in Kansas?
They grow them there. So, Cabernet Franc, usually a grape that does a little bit better in slightly higher elevation, cooler climate and stuff. So, not grown there on the winery, but at a vineyard that is about, as I recall correctly, like 20 miles from the winery. So, but very interesting, definitely a lot of tannic. Or a lot of tannins to it and everything. Very interesting grape in that you don't see a lot of just straight varietal Cabernet Franc anyways. But interesting drink, and if you're in Kansas or Kansas City or Missouri area, I definitely recommend trying it.
All right. Did you bring back any other bottles, or was the Cab Franc your favorite one when you did the tasting out there?
No, I brought a bottle of Chardonnay from the same winery, and then another winery that was close to that area, I brought a bottle of Sherry. Don't remember the name of the winery, but I still have the Chardonnay, still have the Sherry. Eventually, I will probably open those up, and reviews forthcoming on the show.
That's really classy of you, Sherry. Only classy people could drink Sherry.
Yeah, or sing about Sherry, the lead singer from Journey learned, so. Steve Perry.
So what have you drank this week, or what are you drinking that's something different, Christy?
I've been slightly on a different scale. I've been taking it easy because I've been on pain medication. I just had surgery today. So I have not really anything to add. Except for, I prefer Tylenol codeine to tramadol. Hello?
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. Christopher came in.
No, it's okay. I was just like, I don't know if it hung up or what.
No.
I mean, I didn't know if it was appropriate to make jokes about mixing alcohol and pain medicine on a show dedicated to consuming alcohol. So I chose to remain quiet until now.
Oh, I won't be offended at all. But on the tramadol, it was like, if you mix with alcohol, you could have seizures or you could die. So I was like, I'm not going to drink any wine.
If all warning labels are like that, people would probably listen to them a little more. Mostly it's just, this will make you drowsy, or don't operate a car, but it's like, you're going to die. I'd be like, oh,
right.
Yeah. Maybe I shouldn't mess
like,
with this.
It was like, could cause seizures or death if you mix with alcohol. Okay, then I won't.
Cigarette ads would probably be better if it was just like, you're going to die. Like, we don't know when, but this will definitely contribute to it.
You know,
oh, my
actually,
God.
It seems to me a lot of medicines get advertised on TV. It's just like, this is to cure drowsiness. You know, potential symptoms or potential side effects include leaky irritable bowel syndrome, vomit, diarrhea, frequent headaches, loss of sensation. It's just like, and then it's the happy people once again, you know, it goes back to, but now I'm not drowsy anymore and I can get out there and live life with your leaky bowel. So, yeah.
My favorite one was the medicine for restless leg syndrome. I'm still trying to figure out if that was a thing or if that's just anxiety revealing itself through you kicking your legs before you could fall asleep. That one I could never get, but it was like 1 year I heard it, and then I never heard it again. There's no more commercials about restless leg syndrome.
Oh, you know why? Because everybody's taking the drugs. You wait 5 or 10 years, then they can all have a class action lawsuit. That's how I feel that thing works. You got to get on the bandwagon right away and file your class action lawsuit.
Were you prescribed restless leg for your restless leg syndrome and you have to have your legs amputated? Call me now at 1-800-555-5555. There could be a settlement waiting for you.
I don't know. All I can say is, though, knowing how much it costs to advertise on TV, these people have to be making a ton of money to be able to every single night advertise. You know, even if it's at like 1 or 2 in the morning, that still costs a ton of money per commercial. So, yeah.
Well, I think the math works out. You just need like 3 people a commercial to call, because if you get to claim the settlement, then you get at least, I think on those big settlements, they almost get 50% of it for the law firm if you sign someone up. So if the settlement comes out as $100,000, you're collecting $40,000, which easily pays for that commercial. So better call Saul.
Yeah.
All right. Tonight I'm drinking the Budweiser 1933 Repeal Reserve. It's an amber lager. They said it was made in the style of Repeal. It even comes in a really ugly bottle like Red Stripe. Pretty good. And it actually tastes
like lager. I gotta say, I'm super proud of this. Because people don't know what you're talking about. I do. And this is a great month to drink that, because December 5th was the repeal of Prohibition, or the anniversary of it.
So good with your repeal knowledge. Even though we watched that whole documentary on PBS, I don't remember the dates.
Yeah, but also I just went to Kentucky and went to the museum.
So it's like a refresher every couple of years.
Yeah, I had a refresher. That was a super cool museum, by the way.
And so speaking of that, did anybody watch the Ken Burns Vietnam special?
I have not. Should I?
I have not either. I'm going to wait till it hits Netflix, probably.
It's just as
good. I haven't watched anything y'all are talking about.
Well, the Ken Burns, it's Ken Burns, so of course it's fantastic. Whether it's a repeal or the baseball or the Civil War or World War or whatever, like, they're all good. And the Vietnam one is no worse than any of them. It's just different because you have perspective of people who are still alive and experienced it. Like, yeah, the generals have passed from it, but almost they interview soldiers and families that were directly affected for it. So it's definitely a different perspective because you read articles after people saying, no, that wasn't my experience, which is much different than reading the letters from the Civil War. Dear Annabelle, my love, we are out here in the field of East Texas. All I can think about is the sweet muffins. And a bullet took off my leg today, so I think I'm going to be coming home early. We're out of peg legs.
Wow.
They just stuck a stick on it. With love, your dear Johnny Joe.
In fairness, I will say this, that, you know, obviously...
I shouldn't be laughing, but I still like to... I'm sorry, I didn't mean to...
No, you're fine. I'm just saying that, like, I think I enjoyed that aspect of it, getting to hear, you know, words and letters from the soldiers and stuff like that. So I really enjoyed the Ken Burns Civil War documentary and stuff, but I definitely, yeah, I mean, Vietnam, there's a lot more perspective on it. However, my question is, did he cover, was it purely from the American side, or did he pull any literature or interviews from the Vietnamese side?
They did have perspective from the Vietnamese side. They actually had some soldiers who were on the Vietnamese side, even though all of their analysis was, yeah, we were trying to scare the hell out of them so they wouldn't want to fight anymore. That was pretty much the perspective of the whole Vietnam side, because they were like, we were here to fight the French, and the U.S. came in. We didn't have anything against the U.S., until they came in and the French left, so we took that as a win and a victory, and we couldn't stop at that point. So yeah, we had less soldiers, but so it was a really good analysis overall.
Wow, interesting.
Yeah, I would say look on PBS, but I think they locked them up. Like it was free on PBS.com for the first 7 days after each episode aired, and then they would put it behind a paywall. So it should be on Netflix soon, or it might be one I just have to buy, because I've watched so much of Ken Burns stuff for free. And one, I feel like I owe money.
Yeah, I love Ken Burns.
Ken Burns he is an American icon and should be recognized as such. He's the best historian.
I gotta say, yeah, he's a great documentarian. And I was having a conversation. I'm glad you were like, it's fantastic as everything else he does, because I was having a conversation with some gentleman the other day, and it was Jazz, and it's an attorney who actually went to Texas Tech. And one of his friends, and I don't know how it came up, but there was some Jazz conversation. Oh, I know. You know that Baby It's Cold Outside song?
Okay.
You know how everybody's calling it rapey?
No, I have not heard this. But
lots of
story, and then we could go back into the rapiness of the It's Cold Outside.
Well, this is how it started, because it's kind of a jazzy song. But back at that time, because she's like, would you put in the string? Or I don't even know what's in the string. But that was a colloquialism, like a joke back then for, well, there's barely anything in it, but I'm going to say this so that I can excuse my behavior. Anyway, I was arguing this point with them, with an attorney, because I'm brilliant like that. She should probably not get in arguments with attorneys. Anyway, and he was asking me, why do I know so much about jazz? And I was like, have you ever seen this documentary series, The History of Jazz by Ken Burns? And he was like, yes. It was just a random thing we had in common. We both took the same class at Texas Tech. And as you guys know, I didn't go to Texas Tech, but I took a class for somebody else, as did he. Because he was just interested in it. Like, here, I'm going to do this elective for somebody and get them a good grade. Anyway. But he said, he, also a white man, basically was charging me with being a basic white girl. Oh, you watched a Ken Burns series. He's not that great. And you know what I said? Can you name a better docuseries on the history of jazz than what Ken Burns did? Because I'd love to watch it if you can. He had nothing.
Did he have it?
But it made me... No, he didn't have anything. And I was just... But it made me question, like, is it not great? Because I just thought it was really excellent.
It is. And I've never... I've yet to see the jazz episode of it. I have yet to see that.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one either. There's 6 on Netflix right now. Obviously the Civil War, but the West, Prohibition. He has a one on the Roosevelts and everything, which is interesting to me.
Amazing. That one was like 5 years ago.
Yeah. He has Defying the Nazis.
I haven't seen a bad one.
And then World War II. I didn't realize he had a World War II one, so I definitely have to watch that one, too.
The only person I think has a better historical take on the World War I and II might be Dan Carlin. And he's a podcaster and historian. And his take on World War II, I probably learned just as much as Ken Burns. And it's probably just as long as his episode was. At least 11 hours of content analyzing World War II.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just the concept that when the French came out to World War II, they were still, like, riding horses and had those crazy metal hats with the points on it, and they were confused that they were getting shot off because those were made for, like, close combat warfare with the sword, and before World War I, that wasn't even a concept that you could have far-range combat, and then that's when they ended up just digging trenches and whatnot.
Yeah, I was going to say that, actually, if you ever get into, once again, the Kansas City area and stuff, so the National World War I Museum is there, and an amazing look at the aspects of the war and how, you know, despite America's initial missteps once they got into the war, and everything for like the first couple months underneath Pershing, like as soon as America adapted, the sheer flow of manpower and the average American soldier's sniping and shooting ability completely changed the tide of war to where, you know, it was pretty much over after that. Plus all the raw materials, that was, you know, obviously another big thing. So
yeah, but you even think, like, before that, the only automatic weapons had to be machine guns, but those were massive machines that had to be pulled by horses and pushed on a turnstile, but there was no such thing. You just had, like, muskets, one shot, restuff the musket, put in gunpowder, shoot again, and hope not to get shot in the head while you're doing it. And the World War I was the turn to that, where you could just load up, shoot. Yeah, it might backfire and blow your hand off, but at least you have the chance to shoot like three or four times before it really needed to be cleaned.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but back to that cold outside. Yeah, this is rapey. And so I'm reading the lyrics here, and basically he goes from it's cold outside. You need to stay here. Oh, you'll freeze out here. Lend me your coat. It's up to your knees out there. You've really been grand. It's a thrill when you touch my hand. But don't you see, how do you do this thing to me? There's bound to be talk tomorrow. Think of my lifelong sorrow. At least there'll be plenty implied if you caught pneumonia and died. I really can't stay. Get over that holdout. Ah, baby, it's cold outside.
Rapey.
And in the background, here Cassie, who decided to join us with a tall bottle of happiness.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Hi. What is she drinking?
Oh, so I am drinking. Is it Antigail?
Antigail. The Malbec.
Malbec 2013. It's got like a metal one on it on the bottom. Bottle. Ooh. It looks kind of cool, so.
Nice.
I saw this at a little company function, and I was like, I wonder if that's good. It must be if they have it, so I got it.
Where's the booze?
I got robbed by a sweet old lady on a motorized cart. I didn't even see it come.
Oh, Harry. No. Harry.
No. Nice.
So we do have everybody together. Let's go into stories. And speaking of drunk people, I think I have a story that kind of highlights it. And this is something that
we
all know already. And this is even an all God. Like, this isn't one of the crazy ones yet. But I'm happy somebody studied this. The line is, drunk people can't tell how wasted they are. You might want to read this again before you hit beers tonight. Scientist says none of us know when we've had too much to drink. The Aussie scientists reckon that they have the data to prove. An intrepid team of researchers at Deakin La Trobe and Curtin University hit up bars and pubs across the country to compare how drunk people thought they were and how drunk they actually were. Armed with the breath tester, they asked on a scale of 0 to 10, how drunk are you? Peter Miller, professor of violence prevention and addiction studies at Deakin, told the news, the results show our ability to determine our level of drunk gets worse as we drink more. Basically, there's no point to sitting there obsessing about whether you've had too much to drink because the research shows you're just not very good at it. A big factor in this is the fact people could take up to an hour to process alcohol. So if you've just had 5 drinks pretty quickly, you might say you're feeling okay and carry on drinking. By the time your body has processed this alcohol, you might be feeling very different. His fellow researchers found when people reached about twice the legal blood limit, the alcohol limit, they could no longer tell how drunk they were. Deakin University and researchers said judging the point at which someone is too intoxicated to be served or per minute entry is a difficult task. The report shows that physical signs of drunkenness, such as red or glazed eyes, slurred speech patterns, impaired walking or staggering, appear at different stages for different people. It all depends on the individual and environmental factors. What are your thoughts, and does anybody remember the breathalyzer machine at the bars in Lubbock?
I do. Love that.
I think Bash's. Yeah, Bash's used to have one, didn't they?
I think Bash's and the library had one.
I don't even.
There was one that was it called Red Caboose? Or it was like a restaurant that had games in it?
I think it was
just Copper Caboose.
Copper Caboose.
Copper Caboose.
Or 50th Street Caboose.
Thanks.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. I think being said, that's one thing that we kind of all realized because people would just pay the money on that just to see how drunk they were. And I don't think anybody's blown under or no weight on that machine ever.
I must have been too drunk to even notice any of that because I don't remember any of that at all. But the shocking thing for me was that no one has done this study, but also in the back of my head was all the students that participated was like, yeah, let's do this.
Yeah, I think I was surprised too, like, why is this not already a study? And two, but like, do we really need it to be a study? Like, don't we all know this?
Well, yeah, I guess.
We need some scientific data to... Let's think of other obvious things and do some research and get paid for it.
I think that's just where research is at this time.
I figured it was probably somebody's thesis. I'd be like, my thesis was to go get, you know, or get... They probably heard a lot of great stories, though.
Well, I do remember on those machines because I talked to, like, one of the people that programmed them or the company. And it would always max out at 0.10. And the reason they said they had to max it out, because when it didn't, people would try to get as drunk as possible just to blow in it to see how drunk they were. And so it caused a worse problem than the problem it was trying to solve by letting you know how drunk you were. And to stop, people were trying to get extra drunk so they could get the high score in the machine.
Oh, well,
that makes sense to me.
Especially for college students.
Yeah. They're just like, yeah, let's see how drunk I can get. Yeah, okay.
I can drink more than you can drink. Yeah, all the competitiveness.
Definitely there. What are your thoughts, Mike?
I definitely, I kind of echo everybody else. It's an obvious study, but... purpose of scientific research is to prove, is to come up with an hypothesis and then prove it, correct? You know, I know that this has probably been studied before, but is it published anywhere necessarily? So that's kind of, that's every scientist's goal, is to get published somewhere with your, proving your own hypothesis. So, you know, maybe they just were, like they were saying, it was their college thesis, and so they kind of had to prove it, but... also, I think, and I will say this, in human nature and stuff is to, to kind of defy the odds, to to say, oh, if that can't be done, I'm going to prove that it can be done or can't be done or whatever. So, I mean, it's kind of like every single decade we kind of have to refresh ourselves and our knowledge on the human body. I mean, especially as we all continue to evolve. I mean, you never know. They might come up with a bacteria one day that completely breaks down alcohol at the moment of consumption and to where nobody gets intoxicated, and maybe this helps. So you never know.
I'm also wondering, what are the implications for bar owners as part of the study, which means someone's going to have to extend it? All right, what point can other people tell the intoxication level is too much to serve them more alcohol? Because right now, the bar is liable if somebody leaves there and does something that destroys someone else's life. But at what point of responsibility? Right now, it's just like obviously drunk. They were puking everywhere. Their eyes were barely open. But this indicates definitely there's no way to tell how drunk someone is, especially if they're drinking fast. How much responsibility and culpability does that bartender have? And where does the personal responsibility come in for the driver or the customer?
Well, that's
hard. And I'm very glad.
So,
very glad to work at a winery and not a bar. That's all. Because at a winery, in my tasting room, not an event center, in a tasting room environment, people are less likely, they're more enjoying the experience versus trying to get drunk. And they stay with you for a little bit. But I think it's really hard. The hardest thing, I think, for any place, wherever you are, is not knowing how much somebody's drank somewhere else and then walk into your place. You know, like that article said, well, you could have had 5 drinks quickly, but it still hasn't processed through you. When you walk into my place, maybe you just had 4 drinks somewhere else, but it hasn't processed. Now I give you 1 glass of wine, and I'm the one responsible if something goes wrong. Hard.
So are the implications of this in 10 years, we'll either get a bacteria that breaks down the effects, or every bar is going to have a breathalyzer outside of it when that customer walks in, and if they're at the 0.8 level, they can't drink anymore.
Yeah.
So, well, speaking of local wineries, there was a review posted this week by the Texas Wine Lover on a winery located in Georgetown, Texas, a small town just north of Austin, Texas, the city of weird burnt orange. I'm not sure if anybody had an opportunity to read this article, as we are familiar with the Texas Wine Lover, and they have done a lot of great work over the state of Texas. But what are your thoughts?
I happen to be biased. It was a surprise. It was a surprise, but I was very excited. It's his second article that he has done on Great Creek Vineyards Georgetown location, which is the store that I manage. And it was, as always, very nice. And he wrote it specific to the holidays. And it really is beautiful and extra, super extra charming right now with all the lights up. I love this time of year. It's dark early, all the lights are up, just like sweet and charming. And I don't know if you guys know this, but Georgetown just made travel. I'll have to look up exactly. Sorry, pain meds are hurting with the focus. But it was I don't know if it was Travel Magazine or Travel Channel, but top 10 romantic shopping destinations for Christmas.
Well, congratulations. That's awesome.
And not my store, but just Georgetown in general.
And when they come in to do the interview, what's the difference between the first one that he wrote and the second one that Robin Clark wrote? Do they contact the winery before, or is this almost like a secret shopper type of experience that they come in, they tell you who they were, then the article is posted?
So the first time, I know Jeff, I know the Texas wine lover, and the first time he knew that I was relocating and he stopped in. So we actually had a personal conversation and I showed him around. But this time, Robin did not introduce herself, or if she did, I wasn't there and she talked to one of my staff. We have wine writers in all the time. You know, it's just everybody's a wine writer. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So you don't really think much about it. You give everybody the same experience and, you know, if they have a professional card, you give them the industry discount. But yeah, nobody told me about it. If they did. And if she was there, yeah, so it could have been secret shop. I'm not really sure, to be honest.
Well, it was definitely a really good article, and to see, especially to see the growth of the blog and the analysis, and now Jeff has went from doing all the writing, production, podcasting, to where now he's almost the editor-in-chief of his own brand, and people are just wanting to join in. And he's giving a platform for all these new writers and people in on the production.
Which is super cool.
Which is awesome.
Yeah.
Well, once again, congratulations to Great Creek Winery. Made it twice to Texas Wine Lover, and third time's a charm.
Thanks. Completely unrelated. I can't help myself. This is how my brain works. Do you know who does a podcast?
Yes.
You know who does a podcast in my building? You do?
No. I don't know who does a podcast in your building.
The Day Tripper. Have you heard of The Day Tripper?
No.
Well, his name is Chuck Gardner.
Okay.
He's pretty Texas famous. Like, he has a TV show and all the whole nine.
And when you say he does it in your building, is this like in the lounge room that's upstairs, or
is
this a little different?
Yeah. No, in the lounge room upstairs.
Okay, let's explain more. What is the process,
nice.
And how do you get the Day Tripper to do the production at Great Creek Winery in Georgetown?
So, his co-producer, his filmographer, his photographer, Todd White, is one of our members. So they just asked, hey, you have this space up here, but we're doing a podcast every week. And when they do it, it's kind of earlier, and so it's pretty quiet up there. He was like, would you mind if we do this? And I was like, no. Then, about a month ago, I just called out, like, Chuck, like, if you look up on Facebook, like, The Day Tripper, I'm like, sometimes you post things, I didn't sell Chuck this though. I told, and Chuck Gardner is super nice. I told Todd because Todd's the member. I was like, Todd, Chuck's always tagging people and everything, but he never tags us, and you're using my space to do your podcast every week. How about a shout out? So now they shout out every week that they're at my place.
That is awesome.
Great.
I'm going to have to check out the date and throw a link at the info section of this so everybody else can listen to it.
Yeah.
And so, do you have any experiences with this, Mike, of when you do travel and go to all these vineyards and breweries? I know you always come back with the review. Is there a journal of your experiences, or how do you catalog it?
I do have a physically written journal that I keep of daily activities, and, you know, obviously it's got, like, you know, stories, anecdotes, potential Uncle Mike's down home future businesses, ideas and stuff like that. So, like, when I went to Kansas City, for instance, I came back and everything, and, like, wrote down my experience with Boulevard, which I took some pictures of that trip and sent them and stuff, or texted a couple. I didn't post to the page, but I could probably go track them down and post them and everything. Because they had a whole thing on Prohibition, for instance, that I thought was cool. And I thought that they approached their tour really amazing, like, the way they organized, like, the spoken tour. Now, the physical tour was extremely awkward as far as, like, the tour walk was concerned, but it was, you could kind of tell that they, like most places, and this is not unique to them, had not organized or given a thought to how they were going to walk people through when they were constructing facilities, which, you know, most places you can't take that into account, you know. And in fact, I would say maybe one or two wineries that I've been to in my entire life, I would say had a, like, an amazing tour as far as they mapped out the walk and it was perfect to, like their story and how it starts and, like, you know, you're not having to, like, awkwardly backtrack or anything. It's all new and stuff like that. Probably Robert Mondavi is still the absolute best physical tour I've ever been on, but that's not surprising considering how it's one of the biggest and best wineries and one of the biggest and best wine producing regions in the whole world. So,
I want to tell you my favorite too when you're done.
Okay, go ahead.
Oh no, when you're done. I didn't mean to interrupt you. I can't tell when you're done because I can't see you.
Yeah, in terms of like my written out reviews, that's something that I've been thinking about because I do have written reviews, like online posted, but they are not under my name because I tend to be a, like, okay, and it was nothing against anybody who writes a review, but if everybody has nothing but a stellar experience, I don't feel like that's very accurate towards the consumer, right? Like, I don't feel, honestly, like anybody gets an actual great picture of the Texas wine industry, for instance, because every review is, to pardon my French, fucking all bright lights and silver bells, you know? And, like, there's no way that every single time somebody goes to a winery, like one of these wine writers, in quotes, air quotes, as I'm putting up, as Christy kind of referred to, like, always has a great experience, especially when a lot of them are unknown and they just kind of drop in. And, you know, I'm not saying that they don't all have, like, an 8.0 out of 10 experience or a 4-star out of 5, but, like, there's got to be some ones and twos out there, right? And you never see those. But I post my very negative reviews all the time. I just do it under a different name. So,
and so is,
yes,
that a known what? Pseudonym that, well, I guess it kind of defeats the purpose of letting people know the known pseudonym. But is this posted under the same known pseudonym, or are there separate ones depending on the season or the year that this review is getting posted?
Incognito.
So, okay, obviously I don't use, like, let's just use Twitter for an example. I don't use Scarlet Clone or Nostra Venus anymore, but I still have four other Twitter profiles. I have a lot of, what's that word, like, for what Roger Goodell's wife was doing, for instance? She has, like, a sub-account or, like, something like that where she, like, posts glowing reviews of Roger Goodell as this completely, air quote, random person, right?
I think that's called Kevin Let me put Durant-ing. It
the, yeah, Kevin Durant.
Called what?
Yeah, he was, okay,
I thought it was like role reversal catfishing. It's like dog fishing.
Yeah, kind of. So what, okay, I did used to represent a very popular, huge Texas wine brand, but I don't anymore. So I kind of feel like I have a lot more license to go online and post my actual opinions of things. So, but I don't think I'm going to do it in Lubbock because I don't want to, like, you know, there's those people that when they, like, leave a place or quit a place, they, like, fuck you, fuck you, fuck you, you're cool, fuck you, I'm out, and stuff. But I kind of would like to leave Lubbock with some good, you know, friends still, essentially. So I think the move to Houston is when the Mike Laughlin brand is going to unite with all of the other sub-brands, and yeah. TrueReviews.com, as I'm going to call it or something, is going to officially come out.
I
so
feel like that should be a sticker.
Are you really moving to Houston? Like, that's official?
The Mike Laughlin.
96% sure. The only thing that could keep me in Lubbock is
winning
the lottery.
Oh, I'm super excited.
Yeah, wow. I mean, I'm gonna be so much closer to everybody, honestly.
Yeah. Awesome. That means we could do a couple of live shows with all four of us a couple times a year.
Yeah. Guys, I would just be a 2.5-hour drive away.
We can finally bring Mike to the Chance concert.
Oh, yeah, Mike, you need
to. Oh, my God.
Two, one.
Yeah, you got to see Chance.
Amazing. Amazing.
I'm just, I'm just going to say this, that I am very much looking forward to seeing everybody a lot more often, as well as a lot better music. And, oh, yeah, and a chance to run into, like, Justin Verlander and Kate Upton, because I'm famous. So I should be famous around famous people.
I don't think
you are famous.
I don't think anyone runs into them. Did it? They left right after the championship. Didn't even bother doing the parade.
That's kind of messed up.
Well, I think it was kind of the deal to get him down here. He was probably like, yeah, I really don't want to go. Hell. And she was like, no, it'll be a good time. You'll win. You'll get another championship. He was like, probably not. He was like, you know what? If I get a championship, I'll even marry you.
Aww.
And he got a championship, and they had to get married the next day. She was like, I got to pounce on this.
hey, that's good for her. Got to get that ring.
I don't know why.
She ain't messing with no broke.
Nope. Show not.
So while we're
okay, Christy, what was your favorite tour though, Christy?
Okay, now granted, I haven't been to California, but I have been to Italy, so that has to count for something. But my favorite actual tour, as far as the layout, what you were saying is where the thought was considered for the people to tour, was actually at a winery where I did not like the wines at all. And it was in Florida at Lakeland Winery. And their tour, you go upstairs, you sit and you watch a little movie, maybe 10 or 15 minutes, just like the history. And then the tour of the winery is on catwalks. So like everybody's working and doing their thing below, and the tour guide gets to walk you and talk to you, and you get to see everything. You're not in anybody's way. You don't have to worry about getting hurt. Well, I mean, I guess you have to worry about falling if you're an idiot, but yeah, whole tour on the catwalk. And then at the end, they had like a little veranda, like an upstairs veranda, and then you go downstairs for your tasting. It was all very cool, I thought. Very well laid out. And organized.
Oh, that's very interesting and unique. I like that idea. And it keeps people safe and separate, but still involved and where they can see and stuff. So,
you know what I didn't see? I didn't see one person picking up somebody's clipboard by the lab and reading what was going on in there. Nobody was picking up grapes, but just the grapes. All the ridiculous stuff you see when you're like, hey, this is my job. I wouldn't come to your cubicle and just, like, sit at your computer and read your files.
Wow, well, speaking of Houston and things from Houston that change, here's an article. Beyonce blocks sales of Beyonce beer. Beyonce is not drunk in love with the small Brooklyn brewery, which she says used her name to sell beer without permission. The 36-year-old single lady singer is blocking Brooklyn Lineup Brewery in Sunset Park from selling more of its Beyonce Pilsner, which was made in honor, the brewery owner said. I was just trying to do something cool in honor of a woman who's all about breaking glass ceilings. So I guess I thought she would think this is cool too, said owner Katrina Martinez, 30 years old. It's a little disappointing. Trouble bubbled up last week when the Queen Bay fired off a cease and desist letter demanding the company shut down production of the small batch suds, which feature the same pink lettering used on the star's self-titled 2013 album, according to Martinez. Martinez, who's a diehard Beyonce fan, said she brews about 150 cases last month to pay Savage to pay homage to the business-savvy singer. She thought female-empowering superstar wouldn't mind because it's a limited edition and partly a spoof.
All the single ladies. No, I'm just
We're going to have a concert now, okay?
I know.
I think she went wrong.
Okay, that lady is dumb.
Yeah.
I from my perspective,
that's not what she was trying to do.
Yeah, but the point, like, I think when she, when you read about the whole, the same font as her album, it made it seem like it was approved by Beyonce, which she was like, nah, I didn't approve that. I think that's what it was. If she hadn't done it in the same font, I don't think Beyonce would have cared.
She probably still would have cared, but she would have so blatantly liked the copy, the font of the album.
Yeah, it looks like the album. So, of course, I'm going to be like, nah, like, I didn't approve that. Like, I came up with that design. I'm the one who did that. And you're basically modifying it a little bit, but still paying, you know, still relating it to me. When we haven't, I don't know you. I don't know you. Sorry.
I got time for that.
Now, it would have been funny if the lady was like, well, all profit goes to the Beyonce, whatever she has, right?
I think,
okay, now that would be one thing.
Yeah,
but it's not. Yeah. And that lady,
yeah.
And that lady is like, she's 30. It's not like she's 21. That lady is correct. 30. She's making this beer. She's copying an album on the pier. And then she's saying, oh, I just wanted to honor Beyonce. I'm such a huge fan. I call BS. No, you're trying to make some money off of her name. Now you got to cease and desist. That's what you get.
Yep.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Beyonce. Do your thing. Do your thing.
It's like she was crazy and suds.
Crazy. I like that.
Dude, dad joke hard right there.
I love it. Should be the title of our crazy and suds.
If she was just a boy,
I think it should be.
Maybe she's just being crazy and suds. But it's all right.
Can you go all day with this?
It's not like it's irreplaceable.
Come on, keep going down.
Hey, did you make a monologue just for this?
No, it's just,
are you just coming up with it?
Oh, you're just naming all of your songs.
I'm just drunk in love. See, that's what she should have named it. Like, she probably could have gotten away by naming it after a song and using the font.
Yeah.
And Beyonce wouldn't have gone after her.
Probably.
And she could have indicated everything else around it with, like, the font, the colors, the world tour style, but just name it after a song.
Where's that lady from again?
New York, Brooklyn.
Just trying
what if she were? What if she were a Texas Bama? Would it be okay?
She had a big ego.
You right there. I guess she has no ego about her. Okay, I'm done. It's not like we're on the radio.
Maybe she should have made lemonade.
If only she had daddy's lessons.
Oh, she brought her hot sauce.
If she got in formation, she would have known better.
This is great.
She was dangerously in suds.
Oh, my goodness.
I think I took the one song Mike was going to use.
Which one?
No, like I pretty much, you know, I'm following along, but yeah, Beyonce trivia is not my specialty, so you guys have fun with this one.
Man, that's what,
My guess is that Cassie would be the best of us, but,
like, hello.
But Chris is kind of rocky.
I'm out of songs.
Now, unfortunately, I can't find a champagne bottle stopper right now, so that's my more pressing issue.
Why do you need a champagne
just drink it.
Just drink it. So I don't have to drink the entire bottle, and I can have just a glass and, you know, be a reasonable
responsible drinker, I like
human
it.
Being. Yeah.
Does that mean you're going to put love on top?
I love that song. It's, like, probably my favorite Beyonce song most of the time.
Not Ego?
I said most of the time.
Okay. Yeah, I'm out of a list.
I've gone through them all.
Yeah, yeah.
You said that last time, and then we said, like, five more songs.
I'm done for real this time, though. It's all right. I guess okay. We'll just move on to the next. We'll move on to the next one. And then, no surprise, I don't think we've had a vodka story on here in a while. And I'm hesitant, and I already clicked on the other one, but I'm just going to ignore that one. Because this, I think, is a discussion of citizens' rights, human rights, and community property.
Yeah.
And so, overturned truck spills load of Texas vodka on the interstate. This article comes from Channel 10, KWTX. A tractor trailer carrying vodka overturned, spilling cargo into a busy ramp leading into Interstate 95 near Philadelphia. The accident closed the Woodhaven Road East Ramp, and it took road crews hours to unload the boxes of Tito's Vodka so the truck could be righted. Officials say the truck driver sustained minor injuries. The accident is under investigation, and Tito's Vodka is distilled in Austin State's oldest legal distillery. And my question for everybody is, if it falls on public roads and cleanup is paid with public money, it's everyone's right to a bottle, right? Is that not community property at this point?
I think I would probably stop and walk around and be like, oh, yeah, what's going on? As I have a bag.
It was an interstate highway, though, right?
Yes.
And so the interstate highway, the tax dollars come from the federal government, not from the state, correct?
Correct.
And the repeal of prohibition mandates that each state has its thing. So I don't think so. I think the federal government gets to drink it all up. Surprise, surprise.
Wait, you're going for government rights here?
No, I'm not going for it. I'm just saying that if we looked at it from a legal standpoint, I think it goes to the federal government.
I think if I'm stuck behind a truck for 3 hours after all the vodka spills, I get to at least take a box home with me.
Oh, yeah, I think so.
Because
they probably just write it off. Like, oh, it was on an accident.
We never found that box again. It's gone forever.
Yeah, the driver's probably, like, just giving things away and saying, I'll just tell them this was broken. I'm so sorry you had to wait. Because the driver doesn't want to have to deal with that.
Yeah, the driver's probably like, they loaded it wrong. This isn't my fault. You can't blame me for this. Yeah, that's an interesting one. And I think we, and after talking alcohol, there's a couple of stories. And now that we know this is a comicology show as well, and we have...
That was my favorite thing you said at the intro.
Well, it's been 3 episodes or 4 episodes in a row now, so I feel like we just have to embrace it at this point. And this has been the news that we've not been waiting for. We've mentioned it 4 weeks in a row, and it has happened. And I think I'll actually let Mike take it from here.
Yes. Well, it's finally happened, everybody. We got him. Caught Trump in a lie. And, you know, if you go by his Twitter tweets this week, we got him. So he's officially impeached. Hope everybody's happy.
What? Really?
Oh, were we talking about Marvel? Were we talking about Marvel buying Fox or something?
Yeah, we're talking about that little thing that just happened, all 36 billion of those little things.
Hey, all I can say is this. First, and I think it's already in the works, because I think Disney had semi-known this was coming, but Marvel's top two villains, and by top two, I'm looking at you, Magneto, and looking at you, Doctor Doom, are finally back in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So that's the most important question, or most important thing, is that...
Did you say Dr. Doom?
Dr. Doom.
Yes.
It's like the Dr. Do. And I was like, are we talking about poop?
No.
Okay, thank you.
Dr. Victor Von Doom.
Yeah.
Look, you know I don't know the comic book world, so I just had to clarify. Go ahead.
So the second thing, and this is kind of something that I've theorized on and spoken towards, but not necessarily don't have it confirmed. For years, Marvel comic books has been systematically killing its top X-Men. I believe currently, you know, Professor X, Wolverine, Cyclops, and Jean Grey are all dead in the comic books because they don't know the movie rights, so you know why publish popular characters if you're not really having any synergy. Second, they broke up the Fantastic Four years ago in the comic books, so I'm actually excited about this because it means, hey, maybe Marvel will get back to their kind of core brand, you know, making comic books and featuring some of their, you know, for lack of a better term, more interesting characters. So ultimately, this is nothing but good. It makes no sense for, like, for instance, if Superman was owned by one company and Batman was owned by a company, another company wouldn't make any sense. This makes a lot of sense. And, you know, there's a lot to dig into deeply in this deal as far as ESPN having, ESPN having access to local or regional sports broadcasting networks. I mean, the Disney brand. Okay, now here's the funniest news. Fox Films owns the rights to the Alien movies, correct, Chris?
Yes.
Okay. And the aliens all come from a queen, correct? So that means that any female Xenomorph born from the alien queen is now officially a Disney princess. There you go.
3 degrees of separation.
Yeah.
Guys, but I want Disney news so bad.
I know you do. And the craziest part about this deal is it's so much bigger than Marvel, even though that's what we're focusing on. Because even The Simpsons predicted this years back. I think approximately like 15 years ago, Simpsons had a joke about Disney purchasing Fox Entertainment. And it finally happened.
Yeah.
So they're getting all those brands of Simpsons, American Dad, King of the Hill. So everything that they cancel prematurely will probably has an opportunity of getting another platform. This also means Disney now owns all the FX network shows, which are pretty damn good in their own right. But one of the things that actually Christy pointed out this week is, one, I didn't identify that it's Fox Century 21 when it used to be 20th Century Fox. Now it's 21st Century Fox. And it took 13 years for them to make that name change.
And I think it's going to happen,
And I feel like that creativity is why Fantastic Four has been garbage the last three iterations.
I feel like it's your whole name, I mean, it's a big company. Like, I feel like that should have been, like, out there. But no. We're coming into the new century. Like, you could have marketed somehow, some brilliant way. You just, like, quietly change your name?
Quietly change it?
Did anybody else notice?
I don't think so. Quietly change it a decade after the century change.
Maybe that's why they went quietly. Like, we should have done this back then. Now, when Chris sent me that link, I was like, have I been in a coma? That's what I meant to say, Chris, by the way. I know you can figure out that.
Yeah.
I'm like, have I been in a coma? When did they change their name to 21st Century Fox? He was like, it hasn't always been. I'm like, I used to work for 20th Century Fox, and I have friends that still do. That's the craziest thing. Like, I feel like anybody would have just posted these things. Nope.
But as I've indicated in other conversations we had about these, I'm really excited just about Doom. And if anybody is looking for more, like, comic knowledge and good ways to digest it, there's a bunch of good ones on YouTube. But my favorite one is a podcast hosted by the Movie Trailer Review Team. the comic book club as well as the character reviews, and they just read all of the comics about that character and break it down in about a two-hour nugget and let you know more about it. They usually have a tendency to do it shortly before a movie's coming out, so they'll have the Black Panther one probably in January or February. They had the Hawkman one out before Spider-Man came, and they just go through the characters piece by piece. So if you're looking for more on there, they don't even put these behind a paywall. So you could actually access ones that they've done all the way back to 2016. And there's at least 12 in there. It's like, not until listening to that did I realize how cool the Squirrel Girl character was. I just thought it was a crazy name that had some cool covers. But she's actually a really cool character when you analyze it. So take the opportunity if you're just looking to get some more knowledge and don't want to buy the comics, or your comics look better on the wall than they do being read, listen to the podcast, and I think that would help. Any other thoughts about it, Mike? Anything that you're anticipating outside of the comic books finally bringing back mutants, as well as now they're able to reference mutants in the movies? What other implications of this deal do you see?
One of the only negatives that I'm kind of looking at is that Disney is already kind of starting to pull its movies off of Netflix and everything, because they kind of want to do their own streaming. One of the things that's lesser known items, but you know, still pretty big, is they're gaining Fox's share in Hulu, which brings, I think, their total share in the Hulu platform up to like 60 or 80% of that. So if you're not already on Hulu, then they might soon only have their movies, TV shows, and stuff like that on Hulu, which is not a big deal, but we all kind of, minus one or two series, the Netflix Marvel shows have been universally pretty good. So that is the only thing that I'm kind of concerned about. However, I'm going to say this. I trust Disney. You know, I'm pretty sure I was one of the people who was like, oh, Disney's buying Marvel. Oh, that's going to suck, and they're only going to do terrible things. Oh, Disney's buying Lucasfilm. Oh, it's going to suck, and they're only going to do terrible things. And so far, like, okay, you're not going to get, like, I'm going to say an English patient caliber movie necessarily, but there hasn't been a bad Marvel movie. And of the three Star Wars movies, there has not been a bad one released yet. So because Disney is ultimately now one of the biggest content generating companies in the entire world. So they're like, oh, you know what? We're some source. We'll just throw money at a problem until it's not a problem, and it's still going to make $1 billion for us, so why not?
And what we're living out is the best Disney film is still yet to come, the live-action version of Lion King. And I'm not even kidding right now.
Ooh, I'm really, really excited about that. I think Beyonce's going to be in it.
Beyonce?
Beyonce.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think all of the casting decisions are so far good. All of like the kind of back end production decisions are pretty good so far on it. You know, I was kind of hesitant about what was the one that just came out, Beauty and the Beast, because we have also on the other side of it seen like some of the Cinderella movies that have been pretty bad, you know. But Beauty and the Beast was good. Looks like the Mulan movie that they've got coming out looks like it's going to be pretty good. But the most important one, other than Lion King, as far as the long-term success, is they've got to get The Hunchback of Notre Dame right. I'm sorry, that's far more important.
I didn't realize they were making a Mulan one. I'm all excited now.
I think they're just going to go through the whole catalog and make them all. After they pulled off The Jungle Book and made that one pretty awesome, the live-action version, which is probably better than the cartoon version. But I think before
they're doing
Dumbo, aren't they? Didn't they say they are doing Dumbo?
Yeah, they are doing that one too.
And so, they're going to do Dumbo. Oh, that means Sword in the Stone should be on the list probably as well. Pinocchio.
Oh, they've got to do
amazing.
they've got to do a live-action version of Robin Hood, the one with the fox and the bears and stuff like that, because that was just kind of, I like that movie.
Oh, that would be a good twist, where it's not all the humans, they actually have just the fox.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because that was, like, kind of scary at one point, you know, all the arrows shooting, like, sticking out of his hat in the river, you know?
Yeah.
They could go a long way with this.
I'm going to say The Great Mouse Detective. Nobody's even thought about that one.
Ooh,
but
yeah.
I'd go see that movie.
I remember that.
And so what are some animated Fox films that have the opportunity of becoming All Dogs Go to Heaven?
I don't know about that one.
Yeah, I mean,
sad and depressing.
I'm trying to think.
It's hard to make all the dogs go to heaven.
All the animated, like, Fox films are kind of depressing now that I'm thinking about it.
Well,
because Fern Gully is theirs too. That's just about
destruction of a forest. Yeah, destroying a forest. Yeah.
Who did 101 Dalmatians? I think it was Universal.
That's
Disney. They've already done a live action of that one.
Yeah, they did too, I think. Mm-hmm.
Well, I can't remember. Sorry.
Ice Age will be pretty cool live action.
Yeah, didn't they do the what was it, the Pete the Dragon or whatever?
Yeah, that's Disney, and they already did Pete the Magic Dragon.
Yeah, that
was
really good. They did a good job on that one too.
I think so. I think the moral is that Disney, so far, all the brands that they've bought, they've taken very good care of and stewardship of. So ultimately, in Disney, we trust. I mean, I trust them. I mean, based upon what we've seen, yeah, there have been some throwaway Marvel villains and stuff like that. But what they've done with the good ones, like Loki, for instance, heck yeah, let's keep it coming with Doom. I think they've already got Magneto, because I think that what's that guy's name? Michael
Fassbender?
Something who plays he's a good Magneto. I think they can keep him around. And I think Ryan Reynolds is like, I don't know if any of you guys follow Ryan Reynolds on Twitter, but his tweets about this, about the Disney merger, have been hilarious. For instance, showing Deadpool getting taken out of Disney World in handcuffs. His tweet about, looks like it's time to get intimate with the mouse. I definitely think they need to keep him around and stuff. But, I think that they've, you know, Disney, I trust them. So the first thing you got to do with when you talk about Dr. Doom is kind of like with Magneto, you start out with an actor like Fassbender and just tell him, hey, here's kind of the parameters of the part. Ooh, man, imagine if we could get Loki, Dr. Doom, and Magneto all on screen at once.
Like,
that's the team up movie I want to see.
So with Dr. Doom, immediately what pops in my head, even though you can't understand anything he ever says, is Benicio del Toro. That he's a good enough actor to probably pull that off. It's just you're not all
going to
tell what he says.
Okay, but non-spoilers for the movie that I just saw last night and everything, but he does a really good American accent in Star Wars. So he can clearly speak clearly when he wants to.
Okay.
It's just does he want to.
And so, go ahead, Chris.
Every time you guys say Dr. Doom, all I hear is Dr. Doom. And all I can think about is Hanky the Christmas Poo.
I think then your production company could definitely write the parodies of all the movies.
It'd be like Weird Al, but in film.
Absolutely. And Weird Al still belongs in the Hall of Fame. I don't care what anybody says.
Well, okay, sorry, that's all I had.
Speaking of Star Wars, are you able to give a non-spoiler review of the movie?
Okay, I've been thinking about this movie all day, so I'm going to say this. Of all of the Star Wars movies, and I've seen them all, even the Ewok Adventure ones, the holiday special. I've seen every episode of the Clone Wars, read, you know, dozens and dozens of books and comic books about Star Wars. I've never thought about a Star Wars movie as much as I have about the movie I saw last night. Here's kind of my little non-spoilery review of it and everything, because ultimately you can't review this movie without talking about it with people. And I'm going to say this, Chris, and this will make sense to you. It's a lot like Mass Effect.
Okay.
In that you have to know everything up to all of the, like, you have to be able to talk about every single thing in order to review it properly. But having said that, here's my review. It is not the best Star Wars movie and everything, but it is probably the best movie, like, in terms of action, dialogue, plot, character development, cinematography, all of those things in the Star Wars movie line. So, like, it's not the most, I'm going to say, Star Wars-y of all the movies, like, you know, like midichlorians and the Force and stuff like that. But it, by itself, is a good movie, tells a good story, like a great story, really, from point A to point B. It finishes that story. But you are kind of left with a lot of WTF about this movie and about, like, okay, well, wow, they did that. I'm going to say this. Every single one of my predictions about the story was wrong. I did not guess where the story was going, what the characters in the movie were going to do. So this is going to be the Star Wars movie that, you know, you go to Avengers and, like, you kind of know, like, in Civil War and everything, how it's roughly going to end. Not just if you've read the comic books, but it's a movie and it's got kind of like these plot points and you can see the villain moving around in the background. You know, they're making obvious moves and people are going to side obviously with each other. Yeah, this movie is completely not like that. There's absolutely, it's the most surprising movie I think I've ever seen story-wise that's been in like this Marvel, Star Wars, DC, I don't know, without spoiling it, can't say anything else, but I am so questioning everything that I saw in that movie, and I need to see it 5 or 6 more times to kind of, like, go back over it in my head, you know, and, like, wow, okay, where did this come from? Should I have seen this coming? You know, that is the question that I left with at the end of the movie, is, like, should I have seen that coming? So, that's my review.
Well, thank you for the review. I don't think I'm going to be able to see it until...
What do you mean? I thought we were going to see it tomorrow.
Yeah, that's if you can get tickets. Have you booked the tickets?
No.
Yeah, I was going to say, every showing...
Let me look.
And so,
yeah, I was going to say, this is just Lubbock, but every single showing at every single theater has been sold out for a month for Star Wars.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, and that's rare. That is very rare.
I was thinking I'm most likely going to have to see it the weekend between Christmas and New Year's when daycare is open, one of those days, so I could drop Christopher off at 6 and get to the theater at the first showing and watch it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's going to be my best opportunity. But if you find C, take the card right now.
Can I make a public service announcement?
Yes.
Okay. This is just my opinion, and because what you just said is something that I don't feel like a lot of parents do, because I went to the 11:30 showing last night, and there was parents with kids under the age of 5 or 6 there. And so, by all means, I acknowledge that people need to include their families in activities, and that, like, you know, sometimes you can't find a babysitter. I get that. But I also don't think that you should make other people, especially that late at night, and, like, the movie didn't get out until 2:15 in the morning. And so it's not, I would never call anybody a bad parent, but I'm borderline those people last night who had their yelling kids who were tired. I mean, those kids were tired. They're like 4 or 5 years old. They need to go to bed at like 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock in the evening. And you've got them at Star Wars at midnight. I'm sorry, but that's borderline bad parenting. So just my public service announcement. You know, this is not, it's not a not kid-friendly movie and stuff. But, you know, it's fantasy violence and stuff like that. So I would say definitely take your kids as long as they're mature and stuff like that and they can handle some of the violent aspects of the franchise and everything.
But, what is it rated?
Take them during the date. It's rated PG-13 and stuff.
All right, so don't take your kid unless they're 13 or older. How about that? That's what
they're rated
before.
I mean, I'm all in favor of taking young kids, but, man, not at midnight. I mean, that's just too late. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's really late. Yeah, my mom.
But yeah,
town,
I mean, I would definitely
take advantage.
No. Did you guys buy tickets?
Did you pick her up?
Yeah, I did. I shared a post on Facebook, and
I thought that was the funniest thing.
Let me see if I can find it real quick. And I was I saw the post, and a friend on Facebook posted it, and I was like, okay, yeah, this is something that I'm kind of glad to see. And so it says, stop picking up things that are not yours. Stop picking problems. Stop picking stress. Stop picking up worry. Stop picking up anything that's not yours to carry. Which I was like, awesome. Kind of needed to hear that. It's awesome. So then my stepdad proceeds to post.
He's one of the funniest people I have on
my
Facebook.
Feed saying, so, ... You're still picking up your mom from the airport, or should we make other plans? And I'm like, of course I am. She's my mama. So.
Wait, did you change your name officially yet? Because I think you were supposed to change your name.
What do you mean I changed my name?
He posted that on Facebook. You're supposed to change your name to that woman's name from the Three Billboards movie or something.
Oh, that was a joke.
To what?
So my stepdad posted something else about something about some papers, and if not, then my name's going to change to Frances McDormand, which is a character off of a recent movie. It was like Three Billboards. And
it's like, you would have to watch that movie to get the reference. I'm like,
yeah,
I'm sure it's hilarious, but I haven't seen the movie.
Yeah, I hadn't watched it, so I was like, is this a joke? Like, I don't understand it. I was like, I don't want to be named Frances. I was like, wait, I'm grown, right? Like, you can't do that.
Wait, when's his birthday?
When is his birthday?
It's
August.
I feel like, but you have to set a reminder. It's a long game joke.
Yeah.
You, like, on his birthday, you should change your Facebook name to that. I'm going to wish him a happy birthday.
Quick question, Mike. Is there any value to seeing this movie in 3D? Because that's the only option that's available.
If you're a really huge 3D fan, yes. But there wasn't really anything that stood out to me like, wow, I wish I could have seen this in 3D. Okay.
Well, that's all that's left anyway, so it looks like I'm going to have to see it in 3D at 2 o'clock tomorrow. Continuing to the Billboard jokes. And I don't think that movie's supposed to be joked about. It's Oscar bait, and isn't it about, like, a sad mom?
Yeah, that's what I didn't understand. I was like, wait, that's a movie, and I thought it was about finding the killer to her daughter, and I'm just like, I don't understand.
Yeah, that's pure Oscar bait.
But I like that actress. She's funny. I like her. She's very...
All right. Spencer bought. I'll have a review next week, and then we just have to get Kristen to watch it, who never goes to the movies except to see JFK flicks. Or Abraham Lincoln. She just goes and sees historical movies. Well, just think of this as a prehistorical movie.
I just am not a huge sci-fi fan. I'm not a huge Star Wars fan, and you know,
it's not
George Lucas is a crazy person.
Think of it as sci-fi. Think of it as a documentary.
You say that about everything.
It's not a documentary.
It
you
is a documentary.
You say that about everything.
In a place far, far away. How do you know? Have you been far, far away?
From the house? Yeah, I travel sometimes.
In a galaxy far away.
Oh, in a galaxy?
Like.
Maybe in my dreams.
I think this argument's done. It's clear. She hasn't been. It's a documentary till proven otherwise.
I wish I was an astronaut.
Well.
Okay, let me ask you this then. Well, Mike said you could enjoy it all on its own. Do I have to watch the other 1 million stupid Star Wars movies to see this one movie? Will I get I haven't seen?
No one has to watch the first six.
Yeah, you don't have to watch the whole thing in order to...
But you haven't seen the movie. Mike, the question is for Mike. Will I understand the movie if I have not seen any of the recent ones? Hello?
Understand this movie?
Yes. Let me give you a for example. Remember after I had brain surgery? I don't always just see JFK movies. One time, I went to go see what I thought was the second one of... What's that show with the Katniss in it?
Oh, Hunger Games?
Yes. So, I thought I was going to go see the second Hunger Games, but it was the third Hunger Games. And I missed the second one, and I saw the first one. And that whole movie, I was... so clueless, and I thought it was because of the brain surgery. I was like, what have I forgotten? Like, I don't remember. And then I realized it was number 3, and I missed number 2. So I didn't really, like, I watched it, and I didn't hate it because I was at Flick, so I could eat some food, but I didn't really get it because I missed some key parts from 2 for it to make sense.
Okay. I'm going to say this. You didn't see The Force Awakens, in other words, is what you're saying? Like the last Star Wars movie?
The last Star Wars I saw had Jar Jar Binks, and I was done.
Okay, then...
Star Wars Episode 1.
I'll be honest, despite how self-contained the story is, in order to properly understand the characters, I think you have to have at least seen Episode 7. So let's put it that way. It's not complex by any means, and you could pick everything up really fast. But however, if you haven't seen Episode 7, there's a pretty major character death in it that if you go into Episode 8 not knowing about, it might shock you. So, yeah, you need to... I would highly recommend starting with Episode 1, then seeing 2 and 3, then Rogue 1, and then 4, 5, and 6, and then Episode 7. That's actually what I did Wednesday and Thursday.
I will not be doing any of that.
Okay.
I'm going to live vicariously for you guys and just trust you that all the sci-fi people love it.
No, I mean, as a fan, I'm going to tell you, like, honestly, don't see this movie unless you know and understand fairly well the whole Star Wars mythos. So, yeah.
Yep. It's okay. We don't all have to like the same things.
Yes, we do. This
but,
is
I mean,
America.
Even... I mean, I saw it last night with a non-Star Wars fan, but she went and saw Force Awakens with me, and that was the last time she had seen the movie. I mean, that was like 2 years ago. But she still picked it up and was like, fine. She at least had a recollection of the last movie. So understanding this one wasn't so bad, if that makes any sense. But
yeah.
Still, she'd at least seen the previous movie in the setting. So, even though she hasn't seen Rogue One, but that's kind of a standalone one anyway. So, I definitely would recommend if you want to see this, at least see Episode 7. Episode 7 is actually a pretty good jumping on point for the series, anyways. So, if you just see that one, then you could see this one and you'd be caught up. So,
okay.
But if you're anything like me, yeah, I'm going to try to have an entire screen probably on New Year's Day of all 9 and see if I can do it. So.
Oh, my God. No, that sounds like hell to me.
Oh, no, that sounds like,
I just don't love it.
Like heaven to me.
I know. I just don't love it. I just don't. I'm sorry my voice is weird. I was intubated.
I love sci-fi movies. Yeah, Rogue One.
And
kind of lost a little.
All the allergies.
Yeah, I have allergies as well. I took some allergy medicine today, and for some odd reason, I still have pressure in my eye. I'm like, at first I was like, do I have pink eye? I had better not.
I mean, oh, God.
I'm a child, and they're like, diseased. And they touch your face all the time. Yeah. I don't know. Christopher was like grabbing my face, trying to kiss me.
Wow.
Oh my God. So cute.
I know.
And so before we go, what is everybody watching this week that's not Star Wars related?
Oh, I'm having a marathon on Netflix. I'm almost done.
And so, can I make a guess? Was it in the notes?
No, I don't think so. Oh, yeah, it is.
And so, what are you watching? What season?
I finally got to season 12 of Supernatural. And then once I finish that, then I need to catch up on season 13.
How many seasons of Supernatural is there?
Currently, there's...
Currently, they still have 13?
Yeah! I mean, I remember watching this when I was in college, and then I stopped for a very, very long time. And so then I kind of basically binged-watched it since the summer. I started in, I think it was in June? No, July. It had to be in July. And I saw the very first episode of Supernatural and didn't realize that both of the actors are from Texas. And I didn't know. No, you might give me that look. I didn't know. So, anyways, so I'm almost done with season 12. And I'm going to go.
They're cute guys.
I know, they're very handsome guys. There is an episode where there was just like, it was pretty funny. It was the episodes, and they were like, they went into a different quote unquote dimension, and found out that they were actors, and that one of them starred in a soap opera, which was all true. And he's like, "Huh, we're rich." Like, hey, let's get Rich Me's credit card so we can rack it up, which they did.
That's funny.
So it's a pretty good series, I think. I mean, plus it's been going on. I mean, a season a year, right? So it's been going on for 13 years.
Yeah,
which is a long time. So, man. And I know they go to conventions and stuff, and so it'd be cool to meet them. That's about it. That's all I got. Next,
Christy, what are you watching?
I have no idea. I don't watch a lot of TV, but I'm a little bit on a rest schedule right now because of you know what. So today I actually slept a lot. But tomorrow, I imagine, I'll have some time. I was interested in your Hannibal, but I don't think I can get it on Netflix.
I'm not sure people should watch Hannibal. While it's well-written, it's a good movie, it's a good show, it's just so dark, it makes you feel bad. Like, it's not there's no redemption in the show whatsoever. But it's still really good. I finally started season 2, and I'm like 3 episodes in. But that's what I'm watching, Hannibal, and I actually found some old Cinco de Mayo videos.
That's awesome. I had, this past summer, one of my colleagues was like, you gotta watch this show, it's called Shameless. She's like, it's terrible. You can only watch like one episode at a time, because it's awful and it's dark, but it's so good. And it was. And I did watch the first season. It reminded me of my childhood. Like, that's how I grew up.
Shameless?
With a con artist, alcoholic father. Yeah.
Shameless is insane. It's
yeah.
But it's somehow that show's made it. It's like, I think season 9 or 10 now. It's up there. And somehow they keep yeah. going, and it's not bad. Occasionally I'll catch it on the airplane when I travel, because I don't have Showtime, because I'm saving up for Hulu now. But, nah, Shameless is really good.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And so, maybe I'll watch some more of that. Or documentaries. I gotta see what documentaries are out.
Mike? What are you watching, Mike?
My Netflix queue is currently, like, clogged up because for some reason this December, Netflix is releasing a ton of stuff. So, currently watching The Crown Season 2, just finished up the Suez Canal Crisis from 57, episode-wise. Of course, Easy, I've been recommended to watch. Another Netflix series, Dark, another Netflix series, Godless, another Netflix series. So those are all kind of on my list. Troll Hunters Season 2, Magician Season 2, Black Mirror Season 4. Also coming out is that new Will Smith movie, Bright, on Netflix. So I definitely, I think that's released at the end of this month. But after all that's done, I've decided I'm going to rewatch The West Wing from start to finish. So that's kind of the goal as far as movies and TV shows right now.
Well, I think we've made it through the episode, and I really hope the sound quality is better. I got new microphones. I got new adapters. It's a new computer. So I think I've solved the last two issues that we've had on it, and it will be posted shortly. But I'd like to thank everybody for joining Free Drinks next week. We're still the number one podcast at this address. And for us, you can find us at multiple addresses, iTunes, Stitcher, RSS Radio. Look us up on Facebook. Leave a review on our iTunes page. And have a good evening and enjoy the new Star Wars film. Even if you haven't seen the other episodes, just wing it.
Peace.
Hey.
Gradual, my cowboy blow.
Well, perhaps your injury is a blessing, then. An opportunity for a new beginning. I once knew a man who spent most of his adult life incarcerated. Then he developed claustrophobia.
While he was still incarcerated?
Unfortunately so. The torment nearly drove him mad. But once released, he opened a lawn ornament business and remains a free man to this day.
Where's he now?
Somewhere in West Texas.
There is no mystery about what goes into Jack Daniel's whiskey. The popular drink has been around for 151 years, and its recipe is on the company's website. But a story about how Jack Daniel began his distillery is only now gaining traction. Michelle Miller traveled to Tennessee to learn how a man named Nearest Green help make the brand a household name. Michelle, good morning.
Good morning. You seem to know a lot about whiskey.
I do know a little bit. A little something about whiskey.
Uh-oh. Well, good morning. Well, some of the first clues about Nearest Green were in Jack Daniel's official biography, published back in 1967. Green was mentioned in this book about 50 times. Then his name seemed to disappear until one woman helped discover the truth at the heart of how Jack Daniel came to make whiskey.
It's important to set the record straight because anyone who accomplished something like Nearest did should be honored.
What Nearest Green, a slave, did was teach Jack Daniel how to make whiskey.
It was on the cover of the New York Times International Edition. It was possible that an African American was behind Jack Daniel's, and it's never been spoken about until now.
For author Fawn Weaver, finding the proof of Green's legacy has become a passion bordering on obsession.
This is my research room.
Over the past year, Weaver's collected a library of documents, letters, and pictures, hoping to parse the truth from folklore.
Finally, one of the elders in the community, and she says, well, you know, his name wasn't really Nearest. Well, his name was Nathan, and he's from Maryland. The oldest letter here is from 1898.
After digging for over 2,500 hours and speaking to more than 100 relatives, it started to come together.
I got so excited.
Debbie Staples, a great-granddaughter of Green's, had heard the tales of whiskey from her grandmother.
I knew she had no reason to make up a story like that.
In the late 1850s, Jack Daniel, an orphan, started working for a wealthy landowner and whiskey distiller named Dan Call.
This is where Jack Daniel grew up.
Okay.
Call teamed Daniel with Green, one of his slaves, and his main whiskey man.
And then after slavery, he started his own company, and the person he went to first was his mentor. And he did not see race as a barrier. She began pulling out all this research.
Weaver soon found evidence in black and white. A 1972 article in the Tennessee Historical Quarterly listed Nearest Green as Jack Daniel's first head distiller. Mark McCallum is the president of Jack Daniel's Brands.
When we've known and understood the weight of this story, all I can offer is anything we can do to continue to honor the name of Nearest, we will do.
The company first acknowledged Green as Jack Daniel's mentor last year.
There was an enormous amount of blowback.
Such as?
It ranged from some very positive commentary on the story to some very vitriolic. It was a very tense time in America as well. Then we were into that month or two leading up to the U.S. presidential election. But I thought the last thing that America needed at that time was for Jack Daniel to come out again after all this commentary and raise up this story again.
People had been saying this for a very long time, but there was not one shred of proof. And so if you have a story that you know will be controversial, because most people don't listen to the whole story.
What do they hear?
Immediately, Jack Daniel had slaves.
By all accounts, he did not. It is believed that Daniel opened his distillery in 1866, a year after the 13th Amendment abolished slavery. And working with Daniel helped to make Green and his children wealthier than many of their white neighbors.
These are our master distillers.
Today, Green is mentioned in tours of the distillery.
That's Jack Daniel himself, and this is his crew. Back in the early 1900s.
There's no known photograph of Nearest Green, but this is his son George sitting right next to Jack Daniel at a time when black employees were often relegated to the back. Three living Green descendants still work at the distillery, including Staples.
It means a lot to me to know that now the world will know. Our country is divided. I know there's a lot of hate going, but you know, to be in the South and to have a relationship with someone that you would think that would never happen.
Despite the deep racial divides of the American South in the 19th century, an improbable friendship brewed, one at the heart of a quintessentially American brand.
For me, this project ends when I can go anywhere around the world and say Nearest Green. And people know who he is. I have never lived in this type of climate of race. And when I look at this story, this is the one story that's given me hope through everything else.
Weaver hopes to honor Green's legacy by building a memorial park, republishing Jack Daniel's biography, and then creating this new whiskey. It's called Uncle Nearest, and the proceeds will go toward a scholarship fund for the Green for Green's living descendants and to support the Nearest Green Foundation's various efforts. There is so much about that relationship between these two men that just astounded me. And one of the things that came out of this story was how Jack Daniel treated his black and white workers. Mm-hmm. And he paid them, essentially, according to Fawn Weaver and according to the distillery, he paid them the same wage for the same work.
Wow. And back it was, then.
Yes, back then. And it was based on tenure.
Wow.
How long you had been with the company.
I so admire Fawn Weaver. I'm thinking, boy, you needed an investigation. We need to call her with the pretty eyes.
I know. Well,
all the work that she's done, that's an amazing story.
She's a passionate young woman.
Yeah, I
no wonder
that.
Her dad was the author of Love Child from Motown.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Can you believe that?
Yeah.
Such an incredible story.
Can you buy this? Is this available?
Yes, it is. It is available. So go out and take us.
She's terrific. What we learned from spending time with history.
Right there.
Terrific. Thank you, Michelle, for that story. Really, really,
really
beautifully done.
Thank you.